This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
I wish we had some more, and I wish we had some other free tickets for the next couple of weeks. We're expecting a David Horowitz to come up, who is the guy who asks to be treated like a boy bathing. And what does that mean? Well, he explained it to me once, and I marveled at it. It's such a good way to talk about this process of reaching people who need to hear something that we call music art, and want to encourage great efforts. He said, if you're trying to teach your boy or your girl to swim, what do you do if they don't do so well? You praise them in order to encourage them to do better next time. Or, if they do very well, what do? You praise them and encourage them to do better next time. So he was kind of saying that that's what he wanted. Now, we have had some activities here at WBAI that are how can I say it? There is a necessity for certain functions to be performed by the members of the governing body. Oh, this is Radio Unnameable. My name is Bob Fass. That's Bill Propp, who did such a wonderful job. And you helped him and gave him a very exciting time. Last week, I haven't seen him so charged up and happy since, I guess since Bush the father threw up that fish in Japan. Bill is a great yippie and a great friend. And so is Sidney Smith, who just helped me out tremendously. Somebody slipped my computer a very peculiar set of instructions. I don't know whether it's called a virus or what it is, but suddenly nothing is working the way it was supposed to work. And I don't know whether it means my computer needs a new computer or whether someone has been messing with me. But anyway, there was something that I got as an email today that I want to read to you because it's really good writing, and it not only straightens out a couple of historical facts, it talks about Walter Cronkite, who said something very memorable at one point in the history of the United States. Quite a few things, probably, but one thing in particular, you know, and this is September, which is just a little bit after August 21st, 22nd, 23rd, which were the anniversaries of the time that the Yippies tried to declare peace in Chicago, you know, and I don't want to phrase this as a warning for President Obama, that's too strong a word, but I would instruct him to examine the history of the presidency during the Vietnam War, when Lyndon Johnson, who may have had a Texas politician history, got to Washington, and he did a few very nice things. I mean, he did the buttonholing to pass the Civil Rights Act. He leaned on people and made them smile. And he got the Civil Rights Act promised.
Medicare.
Passed. But he was certain, Lyndon was, that he was not going to be the president that lost the Vietnam War. No siree. Not by my Texas boots and bullcrap. And he destroyed his presidency, which might have, gone down as, his wife wanted to beautify the roads. His daughter went out with movie stars, But Lyndon will be remembered for other reasons. And Obama, I would say, had a chance at being right up there with the other Gutzon-Borglum creations, great presidents carved into stone. I thought that. But if he doesn't get the hell out of Afghanistan, he's gonna end up the way, was it Alexander? Couldn't conquer Afghanistan. Not to mention the mighty Soviet Union, former, couldn't conquer Afghanistan. Now, I don't know whether he wants to somehow beat out those other fools, but he should, do the war on the pharmaceutical companies. That's the thing he should do. And in a certain way, interrupting the daily business of Afghanistan, which produced some excellent, very pure poisons and medicines. Afghanistan's poppies and Afghanistan's hashish were, renowned around the world. They were a pharmaceutical business of their own, not sponsored by the stockholders who bought stock in the United States, but it was this necessity to interrupt that trade that pharmaceutical companies might have felt. And although they may, who knows, they may be funding the whole thing. They're spending $1.5 million a day to to defeat your and my health care plans. Well, I don't know how I got off on that. But anyway, Sydney brought me in a copy of something that I'm going to try to play some of. I want to play some Tom Rush this morning, and Dave Horowitz is going to be here. Bill Propp is here. I have a few nifty songs. We'll take some telephone calls. Write this number down, because some people haven't memorized already, and we don't want to give them precedence. Oh, I heard somebody say presidents today, when he really meant precedents. And I don't want you to confuse what I just said with that. I want you to create a new precedent in having some telephone calls to 212-209-2900 of some excellent report. Oh, I forgot to mention this. We should be getting a call from a McDougal Street All-Star who is in a cameo role that saves the picture Low Impact Man from being an exercise in futility. So we'll see. Maybe that will be one of the calls we get. Maybe not. Perhaps we won't take those calls right this minute. where was I? I have to tell you where I was. Last week. I'll be away next week as well. Bill will be having a great time, as he did last week. I hope you treat him better than you treat me. I had something on my nose that needed to be excised before it became something else, and it was successfully accomplished. Now, there are a few other places where this similar entities have developed as a result of, according to the dermatologist, sunbathing. I suspect it might have had to do with some x-rays and with some gas and gas masks and, you know, other things that have decorated my life. But whatever it is, they successfully accomplished what they wanted to do. This kind of, I don't want to get into too much detail, but it's like you've heard the expression death by slices. Well, this is health by slices. And it's called Mann surgery, and I wouldn't rather have had a sharp pointed stick stuck in my eye than had this happen. It was not all laughs. As a matter of fact, not being able to laugh and not being able to blow my nose as a result for the moment are a little annoying. Anyway, I won't snort too loud if you call and try to express whatever reaction to what I'm going to read you feel. I'm going to play along with it. I'm going to play along a tape that I haven't played completely in years and years and years of my first experience with tear gas. This is the thing I'm reading is from a blog. By Sam Leff, and I couldn't be prouder of knowing this guy who nailed this and did this wonderful research. And I hope you you see why it's important to know about it.
They're not going to hardly leave them away one by one because there's at least 150 up there. So they have to do more than 11 at a time. And I'm sure that they might shoot the blue water than 11 at a time from here on out. And at this point, they're still with them 100%. So I think we need to pack up this man.
This is Bob Pass, and I'm walking along State Street, which is a street that, to the best of my imperfect knowledge of Chicago's geography, runs parallel to Michigan Avenue. There is a march of perhaps 500 people that are trying to make it to the amphitheater. They've been told by the police that they will be stopped at 16th Street. So far, 18th Street, not 16th Street. So far, we just heard word on one of the portable walkie loudspeaker machines that 11 delegates had been arrested. There are about 150 delegates here who have walked out of the convention and are participating in this march. People are lined up along the street. Oh, three or four abreast. I don't want to give the impression that it's an orderly military-style march. It's nothing of the sort. The kids are riding by on bicycles and cheering the marchers on. We're now just about under the Illinois Central tracks. You can probably hear a train going on overhead. The crowd is not a particularly hippie or yippie-looking crowd, though there certainly are people that could be described as hippies or yippies in it. There are lots of so-called straight people. I see a lot of people carrying what look like palm branches.
At the Chicago Democratic Convention,
sign that says, "Welcome to Prague."
1968, 6 months after his landmark editorial on getting the U.S. out of Vietnam, Walter Cronkite once more told it like it is.
As we approach 18th Street,
the Democratic Convention is about to begin in a police state. There doesn't appear to be any other way to describe it.
Vehicles parked in the middle of the street.
Some 40 years after Walter called Chicago a police state, like it was, Tom Brokaw, A.O. Scott of the New York Times, and Columbia journalism professor Andy Tucker told their own versions, like it wasn't.
One of the guardsmen's rifles.
The most blatant revision occurred in the rerun of the 2006 PBS American Masters tribute to Walter, rebroadcast 3 days after Cronkite's death. In her voiceover covering the police violence at the Hilton on the night of Hubert Humphrey's inauguration, Andy Tucker says demonstrators were provoking, by some accounts, the police in order to draw attention to their demands. When the police fought back in a violent and brutal way, with the connivance of Chicago Mayor Daley, it turned into a shocking and frightening TV that I don't think even the demonstrators expected. The film cuts directly to Cronkite at the convention anchor desk, where he reports CBS News producer Phil Schlafer was a witness to that violence and said it seemed to be unprovoked on the part of the demonstrators. Watching this, my jaw dropped. Incredibly, in this tribute to Walter's reporting, the crucial meaning of his story was being revised and contradicted. Like Tucker, Brokaw, in his bestseller Boom, Voices of the 60s, created his own version of how it was. Rewriting the 60s with asides from his buddy Pat Buchanan, Brokaw also blames the Chicago police state violence on the anti-war protesters, especially on Abbie Hoffman and Jerry Rubin, who Brokaw says were cunning provocateurs carrying Viet Cong flags. Brokaw's misuse of the French provocateur, the meaning of which is a secret agent who incites suspected persons, protesters, to commit illegal acts, that's from the Oxford English Dictionary, had to have been intentional. Calling Abbie and Jerry provocateurs was like calling Paul Revere Benedict Arnold. Abbie and Jerry were patriotic Americans, though, and they were that through and through, and they deeply identified with their country and its 1976 revolution. Abbie and Jerry were provokers par excellence. They threw dollar bills down on the New York Stock Exchange floor, provoking a manic outbreak of greed from the floor traders. Jerry Rubin provoked the Witch Hunting House Un-American Activities Committee, UAC, by appearing in a Revolutionary War uniform, an audacious piece of theater that landed him on the pages of Time magazine.
Oh, I would never do that. I'm just very tired.
Well, can you explain how you're wearing an Illinois thing around you? I see you're...
No, this isn't an Illinois thing. It says alternate, first or second level. Good only on Thursday. August 29th, 1968. Enter and exit. Honored guest door.
Ah, I see.
Honored guest.
All right, well, how do you happen to be here? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to drop it.
I've been up since Tuesday night when I came down to Grant Park and spent the entire night up. Wednesday, when I didn't go to work. And Wednesday I went to the convention, to the fiasco. And I saw how they defeated the minority plank, which was, I think, their only hope. Wednesday night I was back at Grant Park, and I saw real police brutality. I hadn't seen it before. I couldn't understand. I couldn't really call a cop a pig. Yeah, I understand that. But I couldn't, and I saw it. And I came back again today. I haven't had any sleep for three nights.
Anti-war movement, however,
and I got this far,
was
and
swarming
I
with provocateurs, acting out the police state's mission to sabotage legitimate protest and to destroy political activism. J. Edgar Hoover heavily relied upon provocateurs in his famous COINTELPRO program. And to be used against the anti-war movement and its key activist leaders, with Abbie and Jerry at the top of his list. Yet Brokaw fails to even mention the widespread programs of real provocateurs employed by police agencies to sabotage the peace movement.
In a free America? Yeah. Then we want to be arrested. Otherwise, we don't.
Close examination of Brokaw's interview with Judy Collins reveals his attempt to rewrite 60s history. Brokaw baits Judy to confuse her serious political activism with her serious alcohol problem, effectively editing out her major involvement with the Festival of Life. Brokaw writes,
"No reason for the violence that I saw, none whatsoever, because the kids didn't do a goddamn thing, and they just..."
In the fall of 1969, during the trial of Chicago 7 for inciting violence and riots during the Democratic Convention the year before, defendant Abbie Hoffman asked Collins to be a character witness. She took the stand, and instead of testifying, she began singing her hit anti-war song, "Where Have All the Flowers Gone?"
No.
Judge Julius Hoffman ordered her to stop. When she didn't, a court-martial put his hand over her mouth. She only remembers the judge saying, "We do not sing in court."
screwed up the whole city.
The rest is all a fog.
And I think that it's all over for him. My mother's seen this.
Were you stoned or drunk, I asked her.
This is the end for Daly.
No, it was just a crazy time. Far from being a mere character witness for Abby, the provocateur Judy Collins had a seminal relation to the Yippie Festival of Life. She spoke and sang at the first Yippie press conference and gave important defense testimony at the conspiracy trial. From the outset, Judy's prominence was a compelling attraction for the music-oriented countercultural program planned for the Festival of Life. Brokaw's demotion of Judy to a character witness for Abby is strongly contradicted by her trial testimony. Mr. Kunstler, now, Ms. Collins, on March 17 of 1968, at approximately noon, do you know where you were? Judy Collins. I was at the Americana Hotel in New York City attending a press conference to announce the formation of what we have come to know now as the Yippie movement. Mr. Kunstler, well, what did you say at the press conference? I said I wanted to see a celebration of life, not of destruction. I said that my profession and my life has become part of a movement towards hopefully removing the causes for death, the causes for war, the causes for the prevalence of violence in our society, to make my voice heard. I said that I would indeed come to Chicago, and in that I would sing. Mr. Kunstler, did you talk to Abby Hoffman 1 week before the opening of the convention?
Yes.
In fact, Abby did call me to ask me again whether I would participate in the Yippie celebration of life. He told me that the police were acting antagonistically toward peace demonstrations. He wanted to warn me that I would be subject to that same kind of provocation as an entertainer performing in a public place without a permit. Oh, I said, Abby, you must continue to try in every way possible to get those permits. I don't want to do anything except sing for people in a legal situation.
An alternate delegate from California.
Mr. Kunstler said, did you go to Chicago?
West Los Angeles.
Judy Collins, no, I did not because the permits were not granted. Was there anything planned or generated that might cause violent activity that you wouldn't want anything to do with it, would you? There was nothing violent about anything that went on in the preparation of our side for this convention. We were provoked. Brokaw's most telling rewriting of history is revealed by what he omits. In 650 pages about the 60s, he devotes but one paragraph to the pivotal 1964 presidential election. In that historically crucial election, Lyndon Johnson ran as America's peace candidate, proclaiming, "We seek no wider war in Vietnam," thereby winning with the largest margin in American history. 16 million votes. More than anything else, it was Johnson's betrayal of his peace mandate and massive Vietnam escalation that set off the 60s Cultural Revolution and that led to the chaos of the 1968 Democratic Convention. Brokaw's boom strangely ignores the 1964 election and the betrayal that gave birth to a whole generation of angry, disillusioned young people. Instead, he places the entire blame for Vietnam on John Kennedy and the so-called domino theory, disregarding a wealth of evidence that JFK was planning to leave Vietnam rather than to escalate, an intention which Kennedy reveals in his last interview with Walter 2 months before his assassination, also found in the American Masters tribute.
At the line now, and I can't quite see over there.
The media distortion of this area of American history was reinforced by the New York Times when movie critic A.O. Scott concluded his part of the convention documentary Chicago 10, for which I was a consultant. I was, as was Sandler. The joyous prank spirit evident among the Yippie protesters turned sour and nihilistic. The Festival of Life, envisioned in 1968, gave way a year later to Days of Rage. That's from the New York Times, February 29, 2008. Scott's false history was so malicious it was hard to read, let alone digest. The music-oriented Festival of Life of the Yippies, envisioned for Chicago in 1968, gave way exactly a year later, not to the Days of Rage, but to the iconic, generation-defining Woodstock love-in.
And they're pushing through.
The violent Days of Rage occurred amidst the Chicago conspiracy trial in October 1969. And stemmed from 200 crazed weathermen, SDS radicals, whose political agendas were very different from the Yippies. Reporting in a lengthy 60s film wrap-up several months later, Scott wrote, "August brings the Democratic Convention in Chicago overwhelmed by anti-war demonstrations and a police riot. And in the fall, Soviet tanks arrived to smash the human face of Czech socialism." That was from April 27th, 1908. Once again, Scott mangles history. Peace advocates who were in Chicago clearly remember that the Soviet tanks arrived at the same time that the Chicago police, Illinois National Guard, and the American Army, all told 24,000 strong, arrived in Chicago to smash the human face of the anti-war movement. As the media-wise Yippies saw it, the Russian police state planned their repression to coincide with that of the American police state. While the whole world was watching police violence in Chicago, media attention to Moscow's fascism in Prague would be sufficiently diluted. Ever responsible to the political moment, Yippies in Chicago created placards announcing, "Welcome to Prague and Czecho Chicago," and even mounted a demonstration against the push of at the Russian Visa Travel Center. But the press ignored the pointed Yippie action, the fact that the Youth International Party was equally opposed to the American and Russian police states did not fit the establishment script of the Yippies and the anti-war protesters as Viet Cong flag-carrying communist sympathizers.
The guardsmen have put on their gas masks.
A few weeks after Chicago,
they're not very experienced with them. Some of them are having trouble with their gas masks.
Abby Hoffman told a press conference announcing plans to infiltrate 5,000 Yippies into Prague to support the struggle against the Russian pigs.
All of the guardsmen have their gas masks on.
FBI files show J. Edgar Hoover sending out an urgent coded teletype warning 7 top government offices from the White House on down of Yippie plans to attack the Russians.
The guardsmen are pushing back.
Scott misses the strategic Soviet global village manipulations of that historic week. In August 1968, as well as the inclusive Youth International global village political responses to them, the Yippies, who supposedly turned sour and nihilistic, who are in fact globally engaged with the Velvet Youth Revolution against police state brutality and were themselves a courageous model for it.
I was pushed up against the lamppost.
The police state that the meticulously objective Cronkite described at the Chicago convention marked the climax of the traumatic American contradictions of the 60s. Johnson's Vietnam betrayal, the assassinations of charismatic police advocates Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King, and the state-sponsored violence, both overt and covert, unleashed by warmongering forces bent on stamping out the democratic opportunity for the people to vote for peace. The real explanation of why the truths about America's mutation to a police state in the 60s are being falsified 40 years later is that these truths are uncomfortable for a media establishment that backed a rerun of Vietnam in Iraq and obediently furthered the Bush administration's lies about Iraq as they had Johnson's and Nixon's about Vietnam. The net effect of Brokaw, Scott, and Turker's distortions ultimately aid and abet the establishment's justification for waging wars the American people do not want. Wars that habitually depend upon the media's fudging the truth, even when it means rewriting history to make America's patriotic truth-tellers seem like traitorous agents, provocateurs. I've been reading Sam Leff's blog from the Huffington Report, an attempt to straighten out some of the spin that was put on the history of the 60s and the history of
who were wearing gas masks,
naughty nine-nines,
the crowd with their clubs. Thus the marchers were caught between the gas and the National Guardsmen and the Chicago police. Perhaps I can find one of the medics. The medics all have...
There are rocks in the middle of the street. Rocks are being thrown through windows. Others in the crowd are shouting, no, no, no.
You are letting me talk into that mic.
Don't take it. I'll keep it in my hand and you can talk.
Because, see, I don't believe in the power structure. Here's what I'm trying to say. I mean, you people all... non-violent people, but you believe in this non-violent existence, and I can't see it. So now, what are you going to do now? See, the power structures is down upon you, and they'll land their footwork upon you in this power structure thing. Now, why don't you come back and bring back some machine guns and show the power structure what you're going to do and throw them out, baby, you dig? Because the power structure isn't anything. Kill them, kill them, kill them, like they did all the motherfucking rest of them goddamn idiots.
Let me tell you something, buddy. I never been hit with tear gas before. Until today. It was horrible. Your eyes burning, face getting hot. I was hot all around my neck. Choked up, I couldn't hardly breathe. Matter of fact, the thing hit me in the head. The tear gas bomb hit me in the head.
Were you cut?
No, I don't know. I could be.
Where? Let me see. Where did it hit you? Does it still hurt?
No, it don't hurt no more. Yeah. But I was hit on the top of the head. Horrible. The police were kicking people, hitting them with those clubs, doing everything.
Hey,
Their guard is still throwing tear gas bombs, despite the fact that the marchers have obviously decided that this is no place for a confrontation. Tear gas canisters are raining right through the crowd. There's a group of guardsmen in the street now. Now the guardsmen that were passing through are taking their tear gas grenades off, and they're going to throw them to his toe. The crowd is obviously routed, and it's impossible for them to go down side streets. They're not being allowed to go down side streets. They're being pushed to the center of the town. More tear gas bombs are going off, and the crowd is picking up rocks as they retreat and throwing them at the guard and at the police cars that are along the side of the road. The crowd is very angry, but obviously ill-equipped to fight with the guard. In the midst of the crowd, the American system of profit and loss continues. A good humor man is blithely dispensing specials of the week to the marchers, despite the fact that the air is full of tear gas.
Is there a mic? The whole world.
Once again, the cry of the whole world is watching, as indeed it is. They're coming again. More gas bombs are being thrown toward us. Evidently, the guardsmen are fully prepared to gas the loop. The crowd is moving down toward the center of Chicago, toward the Grant Park area and the Conrad Hilton. And more gas bombs are being thrown over the crowd's head, into the center of the crowd. The mood of the crowd seems to be that they've been gassed once and they've lived through it. And if that's all that the man has, let him do it again. I tried to get some water for my handkerchief, and the medic told me that eyes comes first. I guess he's right. You okay?
Yeah.
Did you get some water for your eyes? They'll put water in it.
Yeah, I got some water in it. Thank you.
Try to cry.
That's no problem.
Here's a pig.
Who's riding? We've been trying to get to the convention!
The marchers are going back out into the streets. The marchers' intention seems to go right up to the Hilton and bring the gas that they're carrying along with them right up to Hubert Humphrey's headquarters. The National Guard has another very large, very fierce-looking contingent. The guard seems to have ringed in a 2 or 3 block area. Now there are bombs going off in Grant Park ahead of the crowd. Every one of those explosions that you hear is a tear gas bomb going off. The whole area is saturated with gas. There's gas in front of the crowd, gas to the sides of it, and gas behind it. The crowd is being driven along the street with the tear gas bombs. One marcher just told the guardsman to put his gas mask on. We're being moved into an area that has a much heavier saturation of gas. And there's a drinking fountain. Perhaps I can wet my handkerchief. Passing an overturned trash can with a fire inside it. Some people in the crowd are kicking that flaming can, so there's a line of flame along the street. There's another melee in Grant Park on the bridge. Someone with a megaphone just shouted out, "Okay, brothers, you're safest near the TV cameras." I'm not so convinced. Is ablaze with overturned trash cans, TV lights, firecrackers, searchlights.
Anybody from CRV? Anybody from CRV?
vast crowd sitting down now, right out in front of the Conrad Hilton. There's an effigy of somebody named Daly that's burning in a tree right opposite the Conrad Hilton. More tear gas bombs coming toward us. Right in front of the Hilton. Right in front of the Conrad Hilton Hotel. Gas is drifting right up toward the bank of cameras that's opposite the door, the front door of the Conrad Hilton.
A couple of times during the recording, my tape recorder was snapped off. I kept right on talking, though, because I couldn't see the little red light on the machine. It was buried in my pocket, trying to protect it from the gas in the clubs. I tried to hide the microphone as well. People saw it sometimes and grabbed it and tried to say something. Well, we've been sitting here and listening. I should introduce you, ladies and gentlemen of the audience of Radio Unnameable. Here it is a great pleasure to introduce to you one of the better mythologizers of music, one of the better performers and better songwriters on the scene now, Dave Hurwitz, who is the soul of boy bathing. You might even say he was the washcloth in the bathtub of boy bathing, or maybe the life preserver around his
in the river.
River. You see the boy bathing in a river?
Yeah. Yeah, that's how the fable goes.
Uh-huh. Not at the seashore. The boy is.
I don't think it's a seashore. I think it's more inland, an inland kind of river, the kind that cuts through the middle of the land.
Couldn't be a pond.
Definitely, there's a. It's a moving body of water.
Are there no koi in the pond?
It's possible there's a koi in the Asian version of that fable.
Well, why don't you tell the fable? I sort of blew it by telling it before you got here, but there are people who aren't listening then.
It's okay. The fable goes: there's a boy who was in danger of drowning. He had gone out and waded too far into a river and was starting to drown. And he called out to a passing traveler to say, "Help me, you know, help me, sir, I'm drowning." And the passing stranger said, "You foolish boy, you shouldn't have gone so deep into the water." And his response was, "Sir, pray, help me now, scold me later." It's one of Aesop's lesser-known fables, but I don't know. I like it. It related to me in some way.
Yes, I think it's good.
And then when you name something like your band, it's kind of like birthing a child. And whatever you name that child, that it doesn't go away. It stays that way for a long time. But you do have the choice with a band that you don't with a child to change the name at some point in the future, or to give up on it completely, which you don't really have that choice when you give birth, I guess.
I've just been reading a book about the birth and growth and death of a band.
Which one?
The Band.
Wow.
Levon Helm's autobiography. Whoa, is
really?
It good.
Man.
Don't give yourself a treat, Neil.
Really? What's it called?
It's called Wheels on Fire.
Cool.
It's Wheels on Fire.
He's my favorite one in the band, too.
Yeah.
You know, did you see The Last Waltz?
Yes, and that is my favorite movie of rock and roll.
Cool. Yeah, I like it.
But I'm a sentimental guy.
Right. Well, did you hear that the band, they re-recorded a lot of their parts along to the, because they had recorded, they had the whole recording studio set up in the venue when they played. Mm-hmm. And then members of the band wanted to go back and re-record parts because they thought that they could do them better. And everyone other than Levon Helm said, no, man. He's like, this is what I played. I'm not going to re-record anything. And all the other members went back and re-recorded parts other than Levon.
Oh, well, he was something else. He started playing music when he was about 11 years old, playing in public with his sister.
Cool.
And he was playing in places where he was, you know, too young to be admitted to drink. You know?
Well, he has a radio show now too, also, right?
He does, really?
He does, yeah.
I didn't know that.
We should check it out while we're listening to a song. We'll check it out on the internet and see if we can. Maybe his show's tonight, and we can call up and talk to Levon.
Oh, great idea! Great idea. I have your this. Well, it isn't really a CD. It's a collection of things you've been working on in the studio.
Yeah, this summer I only performed once at a festival in Brooklyn, and the rest of the time I spent in the studio, in my own studio, which I should clarify that by saying it's the basement of an apartment that a good friend of mine is letting me live in, and I moved all my gear into, and I spent the whole summer recording. And these are some of the rough tracks. It isn't finished yet, but I made you a CD of some of the tracks that I felt good about, and I thought it'd be fun to listen to some and to play some songs live. And I don't know, maybe some people will like them. Not too many people have heard these. In fact, only maybe one or two people have heard the stuff that I've been working on. So it'll be a first tonight for sure. So maybe some people out there are listening and will like it.
Well, you should call your friends and tell them to get to the radio.
Oh, I sent an email out. All right.
I don't mean you. I mean, I'm talking to people who are listening.
Right.
And,
I figured since I was the only other one here, I thought maybe you were talking to me.
Well, no, you're not the only one here. There's somebody else that's with you. You're
true,
a friend. And
there's Gabe here, and I guess there's the...
Hey, Gabe, how you doing?
How are you?
Oh, chagrined that this microphone isn't turned on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah.
How are you?
All right.
Great.
We'll see, Gabe is here, too.
Oh, Gabe, I thought more... It's still psychologically strange to be on the radio and to think about the people out there listening. And it's kind of... it's like a one-way conversation, but... I don't know. I find myself talking to things a lot lately, so this should be more natural for me. For instance, there's two cats in the apartment where I'm living now named Owen and James, and we have long conversations.
Oh.
They don't talk back, usually. Like the listeners.
You are a cat lover?
Well...
Do you have all the cats you need?
With these two cats, my life is pretty full. I'd say I'm at my cat limit right now. But I do love all animals.
Because a couple of very deserving cats have been, coming to our door. And, like it's a protection racket, we say. They say, we won't tear your garbage up if you feed us. So we feed them. And, boy, there's this beautiful... young mother cat.
Really?
And a multicolored, I don't know what you call it, calico cat?
Mm-hmm.
Except for the tip of its tail, which looks like it's been dipped in milk.
Wow.
It's a beautiful, beautiful, I mean, really striking.
How cool.
The mother looks like, I don't know, she's got a white bodysuit on. But she's wearing like a Batman mask and a headpiece over it. So she's black and white, black and white together. And the baby's multicolored. It sounds like right up the alley of some of the people listening here.
Literally up the alley by your house.
You're on the radio. Hi.
I hate to disappoint you, but Levon Helms is now on the Imus show on ABC.
Well, I'm not disappointed.
Oh,
I think that...
I think that's terrible.
Oh, come on. You have to understand that Imus is doing everything he can to surround himself with good stuff. You know, Levon Helms is no racist. You don't think that he's guilty by association, do you?
I do.
Oh, you don't know enough about this guy.
In the very first couple
of pages of the book, he talks about how there were more black people when he grew up in Mississippi than there were white people in the town, and how he used to hang out at their homes, and they would hang out at his home. And there was a guy who, named Mr. Tillman, who had the right to pull his pants down and smack him when he was stepping out of line.
Wow.
Now, this is not...
But he didn't have to join Army.
What's that?
Why did he join Imus, though?
Well...
He's changed.
Well, you know...
I don't know.
Imus has said a number of very stupid things, but then he's paid to say them.
Oh.
So...
You're turning, too.
I am?
No, Imus is a right-wing, awful guy.
Well, you're welcome to your opinion of Imus. I have a slightly different one from a brief encounter I had with him one time.
All right. Well,
Have you ever been to Texas?
No.
It's different there.
No.
It's really different. It's really different.
Gabe here is from Texas. He's from West Texas, too, which is like being from Texas twice.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess I have to broaden my horizon.
Listen to some of Levon Helms. So read his...
I love to hear him sing. I just don't like the company he keeps.
Think of him, if you must, as the antidote that's packed with the poison.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. You're on the radio.
This guy still calls in.
Yeah. You're on the air. He can't help himself. Yeah. This is WBAI in New York City and KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, and CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia. And soon, within less than half an hour, we'll be joined by WJFF in Jeffersonville, Grahamsville, and Liberty, New York.
Liberty, New York?
Yes.
Big time.
Oh, Liberty is a very hot town.
My family's from Liberty.
Really?
Yeah, we've got a family plot there. And the thing about Liberty, having a family plot in Liberty is we drove up to bury some ashes, a couple urns, and we walked right into the graveyard behind the church. And we didn't have an appointment, and nobody was really there at the church that day. We thought that maybe there'd be some people there, a keeper or something. We just went in the back and started digging in the family plot, and nobody seemed to mind. So I guess Liberty, New York, is the kind of place that you can go and dig a grave, and nobody's going to mind or ask any questions.
You're laughing.
Well, they'll all be listening later on, I hope.
Do you have anything to say beside a laughter? There's that little laughter there. Hello?
Me? Yeah. No, because you're making me so happy. First you bring on sounds that I can't believe that what your tape is, I don't believe. What has been going on before that, I was half dead, and you brought life back. I saw the horse and pony show last night, and according to some friends, we're going to see a lot more of those. On TV, I meant.
The horse and pony show.
That was his way.
I've heard of Horse and Wells.
I don't know. I think I'm making me laugh. I love that story about the cats. I wish I had any animal here that I need, because it's a mess in here. And outside I have growing tomatoes, which I haven't able to take care of. And I now think the insects are going to finish them off.
Well, it's a bad year for tomatoes.
I know, but I only have them now.
Yeah. This is the year the rain really did hurt the rhubarb.
Oh, you're really...
Yeah.
Oh, Bob, you're really in fine form, and you couldn't have better guests.
Oh,
thank you. I'm flattered.
Well, I agree with you that I have no one to talk to, especially this hour, and I can't do work because I waste too much electricity, which Con Ed is going to choke me on. So...
You sound like a cool lady.
Well, I'm very cool because I write.
We really should resurrect that slogan, power to the people.
Well, you did resurrect it. After what you just broadcast, are you kidding? Do you know how valuable that is? And now you have these wonderful guests. You know how to do radio. If we could just have more of the interactive, I feel exactly as that other young fellow said. I got no one to talk to, and we have so much to share. We can't allow that anymore.
And we're doing
it real. Look, this is simple, Bob.
I thank you.
Well, now, not only that.
Now shut up and let somebody else talk.
I will.
Oh, no.
You're so wonderful.
No.
You know, to hear your voice tonight, I didn't expect it. And you're the only sane thing I hear on the radio that can make a joke and be serious and... You're real. And thanks to Bill Proctor.
Thank you. Bill did a great show.
Is Bill... Oh, he's not there tonight.
No, I think he's lying drunk in the alley.
Oh, he really did a great show, and I didn't know what was going to come on today. And
actually, he's making a copy of it. He's doing some serious important work.
He's doing some labor.
Administrative.
We got him doing some work.
You know, Bob, we could do some wonderful things with your guests.
There's some other... What's that? Is it lighting up over there?
What's that?
Oh, I thought something was lighting up over there. I thought you were pointing to something.
No, I'm trying to get the next caller on the air.
Pull it in.
And thank you very much for that. You're on the radio. Oh, poor guy. You're on the radio.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
Well, I am the exact antipodes to this previous caller. I like your guest very much, so I would appreciate your saying his name so I can write it down.
Get a pencil.
I do.
Do they let you have a pencil? It's got a sharp point. George, I understand that you're going to hear Tom Rush.
Well, what happened was I called this afternoon to verify the presence of the tickets, and indeed they were there. And I was prepared to go. I said I would be there, and then something came up that prevented me from going to that performance. What I do want to speak about is your guest. First of all,
what came up? What was more important than Tom Rush? What was more important than Tom Rush?
What is your guest's name?
Why weren't you listening earlier? I said
I was listening,
Dave Hurwitz.
Dave Hurwitz?
Yes. Okay. You want to write it down so you'll be able to...
I'm writing it down.
Okay. Okay, so now if we have a contest, when he's playing B.B. King's and we have a contest, you can call up and win tickets to that, right? And then not go.
I know you're trying to defend what I'm about. You won't let me say what I wish to say.
That's correct. You win again. You're on the radio.
Unfortunately, I guess you probably heard that Levon Helm's cancer has come back.
No, I did not.
Yes, his throat cancer came back.
I did not. I'm sorry to hear that. What is it?
Excuse me?
What kind is it?
He had throat cancer before. Come back. Oh, well,
happy
note. Well. But I did go see Tom Rush tonight.
You did?
Yes, he was very good. He was great, in fact.
Who'd you take with you?
Oh, a good friend.
That's good. Okay, you don't have to give their name.
No, rather not.
Okay.
But I'm looking forward to hearing David.
So on the cancer, the lighter note on the cancer situation is one of the things. I mean, we're getting a slow start tonight. We haven't even played any music, but I brought a book of poems that's been inspiring me lately. And it's Bukowski's last book. It's called The Last Night of the Earth Poems. And I hadn't read it. I've read a lot of his other books from earlier in his career. And I was saving, I don't know, I just thought this one maybe wasn't going to be as good as others or something. And it turns out it's my personal favorite of his so far. And it deals a lot with, you know, his issues at the end of his life and the things that he's thinking about. And this is a poem called D. I don't know, would you mind if I read it? It's a short, I picked out a couple of short ones. And this poem is called D, and it has to do with cancer. It goes... The doctor is into collecting art and magazines in his waiting room are artsy, have thick covers, glistening pages, and large color photos. The receptionist calls my name, and I'm led into a waiting room with walls adorned with paintings and a chart of the human body. The doctor enters. How are you doing? Not well, I think, or I wouldn't be here. Now, he goes on, I'm surprised by the biopsy. I didn't expect this. The doctor is bald, well-scrubbed, pink fellow. I can almost always tell him just by looking. This time I missed. He paused. Go on, I say. All right, let's say there's four types of cancer. A, B, C, D. Well, you've got D, and if I had cancer, I'd rather have your kind, D. The doctor's in a tough business, but the pay is good. Well, he says, we'll just burn it off, okay? I stretch out on the table, and he has an instrument. I can feel the heat of it searing through the air, but also I hear a whirring sound like a drill. It'll be over in a blink. The small growth just inside my right nostril, the instrument touches it, and the room is filled with the smell of burning flesh. Then he stops. Then he starts again. There's the pain, but it's sharp and centered. He stops again. Now we're going to do it once more to clean it up. He applies the instrument again. This time I feel the most pain. There now. It's finished. No bandage needed. Then I'm at the receptionist's desk. She makes out the bill. I pay with my MasterCard, and I'm out the door. Down the stairway. There in the parking lot awaits my faithful automobile. It's a day with a great deal of afternoon left. I light a cigarette, start the car, get the hell out of there, moving towards something else.
Well, that's just what I needed to hear.
Yeah. Moving towards something else.
Yeah, right.
By the,
Thank you.
I thought of you, when we talked on the phone the other day with the cancer in the nose, and I hope that it was something as simple as D, but you know, Bukowski is has a way of making light of almost anything. But we don't have to talk. We don't have to get personal here. We don't have to get personal and talk about the funny thing that you got on your nose here, Bob.
Yeah, I thought of. Doing what Wavy Gravy does when he's ill.
What's that?
He puts on a clown nose.
Mm. Cool.
And when people come to see this guy who they expect to see sick, there's this guy with a clown nose. And so they smile. And he gets that as feedback, and he feels better. So, you know, it's all a question of where you're sitting. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Poor guy. You're on the radio. He's got...
Hear ye. The new Theater 80 requests your presence to your dear cabal at the new at the new production of the Pied Pipers of Larry East Side. Hear ye. Come one, come all. It is a limited engagement. Off-Broadway, September 10 to October 5.
Is this
warning,
a commercial?
Explicit sexual content and utopian ideals. I saw a bit of it today when I was working as an usher at the New Theater 80 on St. Mark's Place. 80 St. Mark's, and it's a new production at a newly renovated theater. Extraordinary gathering of young idealists live as a modern-day urban tribe above a vegan restaurant in New York City. Billy, Dawn, Deer, and Wyatt, are an extended sexual family battling their fears and addictions.
Tell me something, Carl.
Yes.
You're reading this, right?
Yes, I am.
why don't you just, like, tell us about it?
All right. Well, I thought I'd do that first.
Unless
also, Bob, I would like to... I've been trying to get in touch with you. You know, I called you at home, and I even called in for Bill Propp's number, which is also out of service. So, well, I'm thinking about maybe getting a friend of mine and a stage manager to come on your show, if you're interested, or the cast, if you're interested.
Well, Carl, you must have lost my number, because you're calling me on the air to ask for something. If it was anybody but you, Carl, I'd be PO'd.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
Because it's embarrassing to have to say, Carl, I don't put anybody on the air who I don't have a precondition about liking, and I don't take somebody else's word for it, Carl.
I'm sorry.
Come on, Carl.
As I said, I have been trying to get in touch with you.
Well.
I'm just having a hard time doing it.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Hey, when she said horse and pony show before, was she talking about Obama's speech last night?
I guess she must have been, yeah.
Was that, was it, so she didn't like it, is what she was saying?
No,
I've been thinking, what does that mean, horse and pony show?
I think it means when you put it all out on the line.
Okay.
It means, horse and pony show means another word for a farce.
A farcical event. I don't think so.
Well, if it's the horse and the pony, like the horse is something you'd want to bring to the show because, you know, you got a horse. It's a big, powerful animal. And the pony is kind of, it looks like a horse, but it's not as strong and not as fast. So maybe it's like the good and the bad. Maybe it was the truth.
I don't know. I didn't see it. But
Do you have an Urban Dictionary around?
Yeah, but I have to put the phone down and go get it.
Go grab it and call us back.
Actually, I can't because I'm in the midst of probably trying to... it's a long story. I'm almost stuck back. I'm supposed to be moving. It's a very long story.
All right, cool. We'll go find the dictionary and look it up.
No, I'm not going to. I don't know where it is.
Go ahead. Call us back later, Carl.
All right.
Isn't it Dog and Pony Show?
Yeah, it's Dog and Pony Show.
You're on the radio.
Yes, I was the one that was interrupted. Or cut off, excuse me.
Well, no, I went on to somebody else. You weren't interrupted. You were...
Okay.
I segued into someone else.
Oh, okay, fine. The Horse and Pony was a quote from Gary Noe saying the Horse and Pony Show is next. Last night wasn't the Horse and Pony Show.
Oh, okay. Well, we should talk about last night, though.
Pardon me?
I was talking to Bob.
Last night was, you don't want to ask me, I write about things like that. All I know is it was quite a spectacle.
Well, so when you said horse and pony...
I was quoting that's what's going to be coming up.
Uh-huh.
Last night.
So you were referring to what Gary Noe, what do you think Gary Noe meant?
Well, Gary Noe said that's what's going to be coming on now.
What do you think he meant?
I think he means that the media... is doing what you explicitly said, and we can tell by your recording of what happened during the Chicago. I think of Chicago as a wicked place, and this particular president came from there, and the people that promote the way he got his office was in that very city. So when you came on today and had me hearing that, I couldn't believe it. It was such great radio. And then you spoke quietly, and other people speak full of, you know, hype. And here you were speaking gently. The only thing I'm puzzled by, when you don't let George finish, or tell him to call at another time if you didn't want him to talk then. But
why don't you give your number?
No, I can't. What, to George?
Well,
I can't give my home number.
Well, look, Deep Dish Pizza comes from Chicago. Not everything is wicked that comes out of there.
No.
And Oprah,
you
know?
Does George come from
Chicago? Yeah, there's a great aquarium there. There's lots of fish and dolphins.
They have a great symphony, too, a great symphony.
What an ungrateful guy to call up first and then to not go. And not even try to get somebody.
And there was a woman who wanted to go, and I had to say she just missed it.
Yeah. Who do we got there? Well, what's going on?
And he deprived himself of a great experience. Yeah. Tom Rush.
I would love to see him on that show. He should have given the tickets to me.
I forgot about Tom Rush. Can you tell me about him? I know the name.
I'll play some of his music later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right.
And you're on the radio.
Okay. All right.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening.
Good evening, folks. Now, there's something that's been bugging me for a very long time. It's been in the news for a very long time. It's this whole health care battle. And I think it really comes down to three different denominations of morons. Now, you've got your light, funny morons. They're not too much of a problem. You know, they make you laugh. And then you have your ignorant morons. They don't know any better. They should know better. But what we're dealing with now are dangerous morons. They're going to do us harm. This whole business where they send people with Obama with a, and a mustache like Hitler and packing guns, and the media is not doing a thing.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the Republican Party.
You're talking about
and
the
whole denial of healthcare, where the rest of the world
right,
has a single-payer
right.
system, and we don't.
Right, and we have one of the worst and the, some of the best medical care in the world, which is really disgusting.
You can afford it.
That's right. That is the difference between life and death, whether or not you have some sort of a sensible health plan.
It just hasn't come to my attention now that There are morons and there are dangerous morons, and we don't know, not enough of us know that yet. That's my message for the evening.
Well, it seems like a lot of this is getting worked out based on the speech last night. It seems like the cards, the horse and the pony are out on the table now.
Okay, next caller, please.
Maybe a little chicken soup.
You're on the radio.
I hate chicken soup.
And you're on the radio.
Hi.
Hi, Cloudy. Good morning.
I know that...
No. Just say what you have to say without a self-referential introduction.
Okay.
We'll let bygones be bygones.
Well, that introduction of yours wasn't exactly that, but...
Touché.
I didn't get a chance to write a threnody for a Kennedy that I was going to do. But that maybe several weeks from now. 2 weeks from now is your program is going to be right in the middle of Pittsburgh, the G20, and I hope to be there. I don't think I'll have anything nearly as exciting reporting as you had from that really remarkable tape from Chicago 68.
Well, I hope you...
I
hope you have as illuminating a time as I did. I learned plenty. I finally realized that the monster could go very far to maintain its power.
Yes, they go much further than that all the time. And
yeah.
I mean, and you see, the people, you have to remember, the people who are doing what they're doing in Afghanistan and killing civilians, you know, it's hardly in the news, I guess, how many hundreds of civilians they've killed just in the last month. But, you know, it's imperialism, as Chomsky describes it, and they have no compunction about doing within the U.S. to the extent they could get away with it, what they do around the world. It's only a question of what they can get away with. And the media united, they all crumpled. I know that the reportage from Walter Cronkite was honorable, but the media in general crumpled in the 3 weeks after Chicago 68, and they just crawled into their shell and wouldn't attack the police riot and its attack on the press, though they carried on for months after a very minor heckling or balloon squeaking incident when Gene Kirkpatrick was speaking at Berkeley in 83. So they, as usual, they're very firm when it comes to going after the left, and nothing but mush when it comes to dealing with the right wing. That's the sort of the standard formula of liberals.
Mm. Well, you know, we understand the formula, and we have to not go under. We have to not succumb. We have to come back at them. You know, that is a Chumbawamba song. I fall down, I get up again. I fall down, I get up again. I fall down, I get up again.
I get stomped on.
If not for you, babe, I couldn't find the door. I couldn't even see the floor. I'd be sad and blue if not for you. For you, the night would see me wide awake. The day would surely have to break. It would not be new if not for you. Not for you, my sky would fall. The rain would gather too. Without your love, I'd be nowhere at all. I'd be lost if not for you. And you know it's true. If not for you, winter would have no spring. I couldn't even hear the robins sing. No, I wouldn't have a clue if not for you.
Great way to introduce WJFF in Liberty, Grahamsville, and two or three other towns in that area hear WJFF. And the star of this morning's program is WJFF and Liberty, New York's own David Hurwitz.
I shouldn't have said that.
You were born there, huh?
Oh, no, I wasn't born. I was born at NYU Medical Center on 34th Street, but my lineage goes back to, like, half of the town of Liberty, which is, like, eight people up there.
How did it get that name?
Liberty?
Yeah.
You want the truth, or do you want me to make something up?
The truth.
I don't know.
Uh-huh. Well, I can imagine anything I want. I know in the 20s, the group theater would go up there and they would rehearse their plays when they were at Liberty.
Right.
Maybe that's the origin of the term.
Well, I think the reason that Liberty used to be big is because back in those days, the summer in the city was not as good as it is now. There's lots more disease, and there wasn't air conditioning and all that, so lots more people went upstate. And my family goes back to, they owned the main hotel, I guess, in the town of Liberty. And this is all, you know, stories that I've heard and newspaper clippings that I've seen and whatever. And in that time, it was kind of a refuge for a lot of Manhattanites. People from New York City would go up there and spend the summer, and there would be balls and dances and things like that, orchestras, all kinds of cool stuff happening. But that doesn't happen so much anymore, I don't think. The hotel's been shut down, and I think it's economically Liberty isn't as seasonal or well off as it was back in those days. I don't know. Maybe somebody in Liberty can call in and tell us what it's all about.
Like a lot of towns in upstate New York, there are a couple of prisons in the area, and they support a lot of the local people.
Yeah.
Jobs,
but Liberty, that's like West New York, though. You know, I think is it upstate? What do we call that?
It's all the Catskills, you know.
Catskills,
the
yeah.
Promised Land.
Yeah, God's country.
Right. And we've been getting calls from Fred Pecora, who was at WJFF.
Cool.
Who has a burning need to save the water supply of New York City. He's been talking about what happens when the power companies and the gas companies dig for the oil that's trapped in the Marcellus shale layer.
Hmm.
They use a process called fracking, which means that they inject steam containing various chemicals, about 200 of them happen to be toxic, mixed with water from the river, and then the water gets dumped into places where it goes into the aquifer that supplies New York City.
Mm.
So, we have a pretty good water supply in New York City.
Yeah.
If the state allows this to be done, as it has in other parts of the country, water supplies are ruined.
Yeah, that's too bad. I always drink the tap.
Mm.
My cats drink the toilet.
Uh huh.
Which is that's a step below the tap.
Well, you know, it probably builds their immune system.
Yeah, maybe they seem pretty healthy.
Yeah.
They're pretty needy though. Maybe it's something to do with it.
You think that's it?
I don't know what causes it, you know. I don't know what goes... Like
they
cats.
They love you very much.
Well, cats and females, I just don't understand what's happening there. You know, sometimes I think I know exactly. Like, you just give them water, you feed, and pet them, make sure everything's good. Then other times, all that logic is out the window.
Time saws a crooked line, born down to where you die, curve from side to side, pocket full of leaves, holding on to trees, your mother calling, please, to come on home to rest, with all the nights of filled with sorry skies, and all the wells you wish you don't run dry.
Drop the bomb on Beacon Street. Drop the bomb. the word cheat, we always agree. There's no bad company. Just a bed where you sleep. We bear the pain silently. Priest wears a rosary, and I don't hear you asking me to really make us free. No, nothing is personal, it's clean as a hospital. I guess all the rooms are full, the anesthesia's wearing off, so thank God for alcohol. To make all my senses dull, to make love intangible. All that sparkles isn't gold, and what's not spoken is understood. We believe in a greater good, to experience all we could. We go further than we should, so I've been through some bad ones. Written some sad songs. I've got some wet wounds, but I've got some skin that's still smooth. I'm safe for you. Dream that just comes true.
Just comes true.
Give me for asking you.
For asking you.
If you're feeling that way too, you say we never wanted this, and it's an unexpected gift. I say it's auspicious, and if you don't know what that is, then I'll say it in English. It means my heart's on a toothpick. Tray of a waitress, and you're the one I want to take. It's a baby and naked. Step in the picture I painted, 'cause I believe we could make it. Maybe I'm just wasted, 'cause I've been drinking that holy blood that appears in an empty cup. Tastes like the touch of God, and I can never have enough. You are my nicotine, you're my amphetamine, you are my dopamine, you are my heroin. Thank you.
That's called Haunted House?
Yes.
There's another song here that kind of interests me. The title, just from the title, you gave me this song, Avenue B.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mind if I skip ahead to that?
Go right ahead, yeah.
You want to say something about that last song?
We played three there. The first was mostly a, well, it's hard to sum up what a song's about in a few words, but the first one is about bombs. The second song that we played is called Holy Blood, and it's a song about loving without attachment. And the last song, Haunted House, is another song about bombs. It's about the neutron bomb, which is a really interesting bomb because it's been called the Republican bomb because it is the one bomb that you drop and it kills
just living stuff, not property. Doesn't destroy property.
Doesn't destroy the property. So the mansion will be intact, but the people living in it will be.
Yeah, of course, the people won't be able to live in it for a very long time.
A long time.
Not happily.
Yeah. So I think it's a really poetic bomb, actually. If I had to be a bomb, I'd be a neutron bomb.
Bomb to bomb, bomb, bomb.
Ba-dum, bomb, bomb.
Bomb. Bomb.
Avenue B is a cool song because I just realized that now this beginning of September means that I've been living in New York for 10 years. And a lot of that time I spent living on Avenue B. It's hard to... I mean, 10 years is a long time to live in any one place. So it was a... And I just realized now that fall of 1999 was when I moved to New York City. So it's been a while.
Well, I won't ask you to describe Avenue B. I'll let the song do it, but...
Cool.
I might ask you afterwards.
Okay.
Okay.
Then I'm better off than I think. And then I think that I should mix a drink. And then a trick makes two things as six. Well, it doesn't matter who I date. I want some dinner so they don't relate. She could have a relay with a face, but there ain't nobody who could take your place. It doesn't matter who I date. I want some dinner so they don't relate. She could have a relay with a face, but there ain't nobody who could take your place. Looking for something that I still haven't found. 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 In the souls of the underground. In the souls of the underground. In the souls of the underground.
Thank you. 308. My eyes go red and my body change from an honest man to a beast in a cage. And now I've gotta go, cause it's getting late. I know that you won't listen to a word I say. Soon enough I'll see you on the 308. But you better run, you better get away.
Dave Hurwitz basement tapes. Huh? These were recorded in basement of the place where you live, huh?
Yeah, this was. I thought for a minute that maybe I should lie and say that they were recorded at a really expensive studio, because maybe that would make people like them more.
Speaking of a basement, this is WBAI in New York City, KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, and we are streaming on the World Wide Web at WBAI.org. And David Hurwitz is here of Boy Bathing.
Yeah.
And this ain't
no basement. This is more of a penthouse than a basement up here.
Well, here, but you say you recorded this.
I did, yeah. I recorded this in the basement.
Yeah, you know. Next recording you make, try to record it in a swimming pool. You know, for Boy Bathing, to get that sound of echoing, you know.
That would be cool. You know, the Rolling Stones did that. I saw that in that movie Stoned about Brian Jones. He recorded in an empty swimming pool, and it made a really cool reverb sound on it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I know about that because I used to, when I was 17 years old, work as a lifeguard in a swimming pool in the basement of the East Midwood Jewish Center in Brooklyn, New York. I would sit there. There would be nobody in the pool. All night long, I would do my homework. I would, like, write poetry about the girl who didn't want to see me anymore. You know, sometimes somebody would come in, old guy would come in, and he would
swim without getting his hair wet.
Yeah, right. Sort of dog paddle across the pool and, you know, pull himself out. Everybody swam nude.
Oh, God.
And I would sit there. I don't know whether I wore a bathing suit or I was nude either, but, you know, that was the way I did my homework.
So you didn't have to rescue anybody? Or did you?
Never. Huh. Never. One time somebody asked me to teach somebody how to swim. So I held them while they dog paddled and I let them go and they were swimming. They said, hey, that was good. That was good.
Well, one interesting thing that I learned recording in the basement is there is a way to make a humane mouse trap that I didn't know about, because back to loving all animals, I saw that there was a mouse that was, and I wouldn't have minded if he just kind of kept to his space and I kept to mine, but he was doing this thing where he kept them scurrying out from under the couch and running over my foot. So I didn't want to go and get one of those horrible traps from the hardware store that's glue or the one that hits them and breaks their back and all that kind of stuff. So I went onto the internet and I discovered this way that you can fashion a trap for a mouse by, on the edge of the table, you put a roll of toilet paper and in the end you put some treat, like a cracker with peanut butter on it, and you hang it halfway over the edge of the table. And then underneath the table, you put like a bucket or an empty garbage can or something like that. So the mouse crawls in, because mice love treats and they love small little tunnel type areas. So the mouse crawls into the toilet paper roll, and when he gets towards a treat, gravity kicks in and he falls over, lands in the bucket, and there you go. You take him outside and set him free in the park. That way you keep good karma and you don't have to have a mouse in your apartment.
Is there anything in the bucket?
Well, that's up to you. I mean, there could be more treats.
A cat.
Another mouse. A cat, maybe. Another mouse for it to be friends with, perhaps.
Oh, that's nice.
So it can be done. There are humane options.
That's a homemade have a heart trap.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, this is not, maybe this is not quite as appropriate as it was a little while ago. I had trouble with this CD you gave me, like, because one cut leads right into
the next. It hasn't been mastered yet.
I was waiting for that last dying note of the last chord.
Mm.
And
I appreciate that. But it was pinned up a little bit too fast.
Yeah, it took advantage of me and zipped into the next one. I hope no one is recording these and trying to rip you off, because that makes it easier for them.
The cream always rises to the top, as I like to say.
Some people are trying to join the conversation by calling 212-209-2900. You're on the radio.
Jerry Rubin didn't want to see you anymore either.
What's that?
Jerry Rubin did not want to see you anymore either. I wonder why. What happened?
Why don't you?
George.
Why
don't you? No, you cut me off.
George, I'm so angry at you for not sure. Well, that's too bad. You got a free ticket that I had to beg for. And then you didn't go.
And you
missed something that would have made you into a less pitiful man.
I was saying, please use them.
You're on the radio. And you're on the radio. Hello.
Stage fright.
You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, hi. Oh, I know that voice.
Good
you
morning.
Just called on a cell phone in the room that Bill hadn't turned off.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, it was on speaker.
I'm terribly sorry about that.
Oh, well,
no,
that's
I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, David, we have residences in common. I lived on C between Third Street between B and C.
Really? That's exactly where I lived, Third Street between B and C.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I lived right above the post office.
Well, things have changed since I was there. I don't want to say when I lived there, but I'm also familiar with the Liberty Cemetery, and actually,
oh wow,
that black granite ball makes a great photograph in the winter.
Oh, wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, well,
that's
anyway.
Far out. Well, you know, the interesting thing about that block is that Peter Stanfill, who also has been on Bob's show before and is a folk legend from this band called the Fugs in the 60s, he came over to my house in my apartment on 3rd Street one day, which is saying a lot because it's a five-story walk-up, and he made it all the way there.
In the Holy Modal Rounders.
And, in the Holy Modal Rounders. And he came up, and the first thing that he told me was that back in the 60s, him and his friends had a lowest rent competition. And they all talked about who paid the cheapest rent in town. And the person that won lived on that block, and they paid $15 a month.
Oh, that is a record. I had a friend that lived on Grand Street for $40 a month.
As soon as the landlord finds that out, though, they raise the rent.
Yeah.
Can't well, great, some it. Great music. I'm glad that you got to play some. Are you going to play live at all?
Yeah, I am. I would love to play some songs live. I have my guitar here, and I'm already. I was taking the lazy route and playing some off the CD, but sure.
I thought if I could take a minute and then get off. I just wanted to first of all, I wanted to thank Bob and thank Bob's listeners for last week, because the outpouring of at least curiosity and interest about the gas extraction was really refreshing. I mean, finally people seem to really be waking up, and thanks again for...
Well, you were all over the clock. I heard Amy Goodman talking about gas fracking.
Yeah, it's really picking up, and I heard that BAI Evening News yesterday had a large segment also. And then, actually, I got on well, anyway, I won't mention the name, but Northeast Public Radio that has, I think, 10 radio stations across the Northeast. And it was the Commissioner of Agriculture, and it was really, really interesting. I didn't have to bring up the gas drilling. I just mentioned mineral extraction and the repercussions of it, the poisoning and this and that. And the commissioner said, are you referring to the gas drilling? And I, you know, I was happy to admit that that's what I was talking about. But in Josh Fox's film, Water Under Attack, there's a segment to where a food inspector, well, the woman being interviewed mentions a food inspector that came to inspect some sickly strawberries. And after touching the strawberries and inspecting them, she wouldn't even use the water in the woman's house to wash her hands because it was so toxic. But my question was that this is a dairy area and agriculture area, and there's also, I don't want to go too deep into this, but there was a flock of dead cows. And my question to this commissioner of agriculture was, how soon or before or after a cow dies from being poisoned can you drink the milk? And anyway, it was
that's a good question.
It was a good conversation, and I'm glad it got out across the Northeast, but that was just luck of the draw. Well, but I just wanted to let
What's the next big moment about this, Fred?
Well, the next big moment, well, first of all, I want to say that the event on the Delaware last week was really a success. I mean, we're hoping for millions of people, naturally, but we had at least thousands up and down the river. And the mobile theater that this fellow invented was really, really was a work of art. When I heard it was going to be a work of art, I thought, what kind of work of art can it be on the back of a truck? But the top of the theater screen was a sculpture with an illuminated marquee and a crystal chandelier with velvet curtains tied with a yellow rope and everything. It was just beautiful. And folks across the arch of the bridge holding candles, and a plane did a flyover. And I won't read the whole article, but television cameras rolled as photographs of a plane overhead, a shot from a plane overhead. At dusk, participants lit the span of the bridge, a glowing arc of candlelight, brilliant beacon of conservation, not exploitation, and on. But that's the riverreporter.com current issue came out today.
Maybe you should describe what it was in a little bit more.
Well, you'd actually laid the groundwork. You mentioned it a few minutes ago, but should I do it again?
Why not?
I don't want to take too much time from David.
Is this up on YouTube yet, Fred?
It's on YouTube, and there are also film clips from the movie that should be completed within 2 months.
Where can they go to see what there is right now?
Oh, they could go to Breathing is Political.
Breathingispolitical.org?
I believe it's .org. I don't have all my notes in front of me, but I'll try and get it while I'm talking. But you could go to waterunderattack.com. You could go to DamascusCitizens, one word, .org. And any of those will get you to the film clips. And the most amazing thing, it really was shocking to actually see someone turning on a faucet and taking a cigarette lighter and lighting the water. I mean, it was just absolutely mind-blowing. As far as further events, actually this evening, someone suggested that I go to fire departments and police stations. I thought I would first go to fire departments. And that's what I did. I went to a fire department that's along the four-lane highway, only a few hundred yards off the four-lane highway, and asked if we could use their facility or their, at this point, we'd like to show this film two or three more times before the weather turns cold. This mobile theater also comes with a trailer attached with a popcorn maker. So it's a free film and free popcorn.
Brilliant.
Oh, it's absolutely brilliant setup.
The fire department might condemn the water supply as a fire hazard.
Right. I mean, suppose they try to put out the fire and the what comes out of the hose catches fire. That's really...
No, it's a large industrial popcorn maker, and it's actually I think it turns by bicycle power. I think the guy goes behind.
I'm not talking about the popcorn. I'm talking about the water that the fire department sprays on you know your whatever fires they are called on to.
Well, let me say that when I first asked if we could use the grounds, because they have a baseball field and a large parking lot, to show the film, they immediately thought that it was political. And I said, well, actually, it's environmental. It's not really political.
It's both.
And after a half an hour of describing the process and the chemicals used, they actually turned their whole attitude around, and they were going to try to find a way to do it. And if we couldn't do it there, they had suggestions about doing it near the Neversink Reservoir, which runs under Route 17, so there's a large bridge there. And what they did this time in Narrowsburg is they called and said, we'd like to show a film under the bridge in Narrowsburg. If there's any problem with it, call us back, because there was a message he called after the office was closed on purpose. And they never got a call back, so we just went forward and did it. And actually, for the area that it was in, the area was filled. It was 200 people, possibly more. And that's not bad for a little town on a Sunday in the middle of a Labor Day weekend. So we deem it a success.
Well, I just want to review the theatrical demonstration that you told me about, where everyone took a plastic bottle and put a candle.
Okay, I'll read that portion.
Yeah, a candle in it and...
Oh yeah, the local event with a river regatta, Narrowsburg Big Eddy. Participants displayed signs and carried bottles of water symbolizing chemicals associated with the process of hydraulic fracturing, with labels such as toxic soup, hydraulic horrors. In town, poets read water-related works on the Main Street deck, while information was provided at booths on Main Street. On the bridge, volunteers displayed signs that read "Do not frack my river," as they promoted a free evening showing of documentary in progress, Water Under Attack, by local filmmaker Josh Fox. See related story on page 4. I'll throw that in. The film was shown on a mobile unit created by Dan Brinkerhoff, who also provided free popcorn on a mobile popcorn maker he devised. A troupe of puppets, representing big business and government, paraded through the town, followed by a witness who drew attention to their wily ways with a sign, "Slippery, not to be trusted." This was turned back at one town where a lot of leases to explore for gas were signed. And actually, let me just read this quote by Josh Fox. By the way, Josh Fox really made the program last week. It was so good that he called me at an opportune time. His quote, I am a director and producer of documentary films. I do not consider this film about gas drilling as one-sided. It's a documentary that doesn't take a position but reports on what it sees. I have to admit that what the film shows is not good news, because it asks a lot of probing questions. Josh said that he thought the refusal by the town could be a First Amendment issue deemed a method of censorship. So anyway, that's that. They wouldn't allow him to show it in the area where leases have been sold. But we're going to show it in other places. And when it gets cooler, we're going to show it indoors. But really, love to take advantage of this mobile theater. It's really, really a sight to see, and it works just fine. And that's all I have. I'd love to for David to continue.
Well, he will. I have so you.
Unless you have other questions.
Well, I have something else I wanted to play that has to do with a bridge.
Oh, great. Well, thanks again, Bob, and feel better soon.
Thanks. I feel fine. Thanks very much.
This is a story of a girl you know, and all of her friends called her Mary Jo. Although she's gone, her memory lingers on to her family and friends that loved her so. Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo Kopecky. She went to a party with a group of friends on Chippiquiddick Island for a nice weekend. They danced and sang until early dawn, and then they discovered Mary Jo was gone. Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo Kopecky. Well, they went to the cottage on the island across town, where booze was served to everyone around. Mr. Joseph Garkin arranged for it all, but it was poor Mary Jo's fatal downfall. Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo Kopecky. Mary Jo and Teddy went to ride that night in his old mobile to see the sight. He wasn't used to driving, and he made a turn wrong, which was the reason she never returned home. Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo Kopecky. They ran off the bridge and the water was cold, but she couldn't get out to save her soul. Teddy finally escaped and reached the top, and he wandered around in a state of shock. Mary Jo was in the water the whole night through. It seems Teddy and the others didn't know what to do. He swam the channel and slept all night, trying to make up his mind to do what was right. Now there were rumors and rumors of a big romance between Teddy and Mary Jo without giving them a chance. Her mother wrote a story saying it wasn't true. Now I believe her mother, but how about you? Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo,
Mary Jo Kopecky. She was loved by her friends so tenderly, and also Senator Kennedy.
Busy with
in the forest now if they were mine. 'Cause I know they like acorns and I don't like bacon. Kabuchi, buchi, 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 to the kitchen while we were away. He took all the rice and he forgot to pay. He's gone like snow on the water. Goodbye. He never cared to do the boogaloo dance. All he ever thought about was food and romance. And he's gone like snow on the water. Don't cry. Ted may be a moon call next time round, giving sweet milk to the people in the town. He'll be whatever he will choose, on air or sea or ground. The sows are busy with their piglets fine. Put them in the forest now if they were mine. 'Cause I know they like acorns and I don't like bacon. Boochie, 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 boochie.
Snack.
What are you doing down here?
Oh, I'm just down here
trying to
save
these
barns and
those
hot
rods. Let me hear
I'm a nigger, don't cut no dinner, then I'm a slave.
not what I am. You bet I think more rapidly. Think more rapidly. Think this, think this, think. I want to think about it, but it wasn't me. But I think more rapidly. Think more rapidly, and I'll be satisfied as a family.
A shine to mine. Darkest night, for in the forest where we live, it's sometimes hard when so few give. Ah.
jukebox still playing, the crowd's thinning out. No one is staying, but I'll be here. I'll be here until closing. There's nowhere to go, and no one to go home to. The house is so empty, cold rooms to roam through. So I'll be here. I'll be here until closing. And if six beers won't do it, 12 won't either. The night's just getting longer and the loneliness wider. But I just didn't have to. Now that it's over, now that you're gone, I just don't know how I'll move on. Well, the bartender's mad, says I should get on, get off of my butt and try to be strong. But he don't know. He don't know what it feels like. 'Cause we all make mistakes, but this one was tragic. A chance to find happiness, a chance to find magic. I don't know what it feels like. And if six beers won't do it, 12 won't either. The nights just get longer and the loneliness wider. But I just didn't have to. And now that it's over, now that you're gone, I just don't know.
Seven deadly sins.
Hey, 7 deadly sins. You know, we should have I wish I had a ticket to give away, because we should have a contest. See if who can list all of the 7 deadly sins. Not give examples of them necessarily, but if you've actually sinned in that number, it would be worthwhile telling whether or not it was a good idea to violate those 7 deadly sins. I think some of them sound a little bit like they might be
fun.
Yeah. We do have some callers. There may be someone who wants to give his impression of Hopi chants. What a surprise. And there may be someone who wants to complain about something or other. But there might be some other people. So if you are one of the other people, call 212-209-2900.
Anybody there?
Anyone there?
Bob Hiss, 7 deadly sins.
Well said, George. And yours is the sin of...
omission.
Of emission.
Hi, you're on the radio.
Hi. Hey, Bobby, this is George out here on Lake Michigan. Saying hello.
Listening on the World Wide Web.
It's the only world we have. It's wide.
Yeah.
Wow, great music, great show. Tell Fred he's a superstar, man.
Do you hear that? Fred! Oh,
yeah,
the other
guy from Libertyville, man.
Oh, he is a superstar, but I thought you meant Dave.
Dave? Oh, he's definitely a superstar.
All right.
Guitar player, that guy? Yeah, he's awesome, man. I wish I was playing drums with him. Good, man. How are we going to save the world? Everyone has to...
by saving yourself.
The governor is not seeing too well with glasses, and he's not seeing too well with his inner sight, his second sight. We need to work on the inner sight, the insight. Right? I mean, insight.
Well, go on.
Follow me?
Yes, go on. I'm waiting for you to...
Okay. Bless you. Okay. In the tradition of Reverend Fred Kuhn and Reverend Billy and Reverend Graham, Phil Graham, Reverend Phil Graham, a very holy man in the Republican Party, we got to save the water. The water is the lifeblood of the earth. It's the water is life. Without water, there's no life. Absolutely no. Water should be precious. Water should be more precious than dough and money and gelt and, drachmas, sesterces.
Yeah, water.
That's nothing.
Water will be like the new exchange. Once had a guy from I'm not sure which of the United Arab Emirates he was from, but he said, water is more expensive than gasoline.
It has been for so long.
It has been, yeah.
The new oil.
Yeah. And go buy a bottle of water 5 years ago, it was still $1.
Yeah.
Back in the day. But the technology for new technology exists. There's nothing to research. It's there. Everybody has it. They're just holding it in boxes and, behind oil-filled walls. And the oil is so stupid. It's such a bad form of energy. A car uses up oxygen. The car burns oxygen more than it makes carbon monoxide.
Yeah,
it
well...
kills like a whole year of oxygen.
An automobile engine is only about 5% efficient.
That's what I'm saying. This is why I was always talking about Victor Schauberger, an inventor who was ripped off. Not as the many have been ripped off. You know, Tesla was ripped off. They were all ripped off, except their ideas taken, and they were told to go fly a kite, or worse.
Do people in Michigan, Detroit, do they talk this way? Do they understand?
Maybe.
Do they
want... they understand me. You know, but they're like people. People are people everywhere, you know.
Get out of here. You're on the air too. People everywhere.
Yep, they're everywhere, man.
There would be more dependence on automobiles, I would think.
You're on the air.
He forgot one.
Cut that guy off, man. His voice is starting to get to me.
You're on the air. No, you were before, and you're on the air too.
Yes, hi. It's Tom from the Bronx here.
Oh, that guy too. Oh no.
Hello.
Yeah, Tom, what can you tell us in a very succinct way what it was you called about?
Yes, I'd just like to say that I'd seen a politician in the Bronx, and I brought up the issue. I said, we got to, because elections are next week, you know, it's Tuesday. So I said, we have a very serious situation with this pollution upstate, with them drilling for gas. Hello?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, for drilling for gas, and they're putting these horrible chemicals in the ground, and we'll get pollution over here. We'll have a lot of sick people. And this unnamed politician looked at me like he wished I got on the rocket ship for Mars. I seen him in the restaurant.
Why won't you give his name?
Well, all right, I can. Capel.
Public figure.
Oliver Capel.
Oliver, yeah. Not Oliver Twist, though. It was Capel. So.
Twist and shout.
The what? Hello?
No, I just said twist and shout.
Oh, twist and shout. Yeah, I guess so.
You're on the air.
Hello. not that guy again, man.
You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
You called on two phones, you foxy devil. You're on the air.
those Indians, I don't know.
You're on the air.
Yes, the seven deadly sins.
Good.
It would be, if I remember, pride, envy, gluttony, lust, anger, greed, and sloth.
And it's saliva?
Yes. If I may add here, something that this country no longer practices, the seven corporal works of mercy.
Let's hear that.
Feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, give shelter to strangers, clothe the naked, visit the sick.
What was that before?
Clothe the naked.
Clothe the naked.
Naked. Visit the sick, minister to prisoners, and bury the dead. Well, and I can also, if you like, I can. Cardinal virtues are prudence, temperance, courage, and justice. One thing this country no longer practices, or very little amongst the minority of people.
We practice it. The leaders don't.
Well, you do, and I do, but the majority of other people I spoke to tonight
don't. Fred.
If I may add here, I'm now convinced after having a very interesting debate at a diner in Manhattan, that I'm convinced that 80% of the people, 80% if not less or more, get careless about the rest of us who don't have health insurance because their attitude is, quote, unquote, from a lady, I got the mines, and if you don't, that's your problem. Quote, unquote. So I'm convinced that this is an evil, nasty little country. They get carried around. They don't care about us.
That's not the whole country. You can't judge a country by some of its covers,
Excuse me. Yeah, but you know what? I can only judge by my
experience. I live here, man. Do you live here?
Yes, I do. In fact,
I was born in this fracking country, Jack. This is our country.
That's right. And I'm also a veteran. I paid my price.
Say, could you hold it? Hold it. Hold it.
Sorry.
If you stop talking at the same time, you might find out that you're not arguing with each other.
Well, I know.
You
I
might.
But
no, you're. Yeah. I can. But I can tell how irritated you're getting because he's talking before you get a chance to finish your sentences. I especially don't like that. But you got to listen a bit.
I do listen quite a bit.
No, I'm not talking to you.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
Hey, you think I'm talking to you? You must have a guilty conscience there.
No, but it's, you know...
Is that one of the seven deadly guilts?
No. But
no, I want to hear more about those virtues.
Well, it's just amazing. After having a debate with half of a restaurant in Manhattan, people don't care about other people who don't have health insurance. It's upsetting. It's very, very upsetting. I even called them on to it. Look at these people that are working, cooking for you for nothing. You can have a $5.99 burger, and they don't have a health insurance. You're going to deny them the right to go see a doctor if they burn their hands tomorrow? Of course, the whole damn restaurant.
No. More to the point, what are you going to do when they get sick and they start sneezing into their food?
Well,
because they because they can't afford to get, to stay off their job.
Well, I know
you
that
know?
Because I'm one of the restaurant workers that you guys come and leave a dollar tip for, or not you in particular, but the other people like in Manhattan who are making me run around for a $2 tip for a freaking cheeseburger deluxe.
What is a good tip?
What's a good tip? 15%.
50.
And a little bit of respect and not speaking of you guys, but speaking of my customers, I remind them on a regular basis, a little respect and courtesy. I'm not your personal slave for a dollar tip. I have eight other tables I have to take care of and make sure that they're happy. I'm not here for you. You know what I mean? There's nothing more degrading when you're taking an order for someone, when one of the regular customers says, give me my newspaper. You know, you have to be patient. There's only one of me. You know. But that's
you don't want to tell us where you work so we can come in and be nice to you.
No, I don't, because I'll tell you one thing. These restaurant people use and abuse their staff.
Is it the Waverly restaurant in the West Village?
What's that?
Is it the Waverly restaurant?
No, it's not the Waverly restaurant.
I'm close, though, right? It's something like that. It's open 24 hours.
I'm on a project right now where I want to write a book called Nickel and Diamond America. But not exactly at that time, but I have a degree in journalism. So I've taken a couple of years off, and I'm working in these places, retail, restaurants, blah, 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 and just gathering my notes.
Hey, man, I'll tell you what. If you work in a restaurant like that and you meet these people, there's no better place to get material. Because I go to the Waverly restaurant a lot because it's right around the corner from the apartment that I'm staying in.
Well, those guys
have seen it all. Let me tell you, one way to learn about life is to work in a 24-hour restaurant in Manhattan.
Well, there's a movie I'd like to recommend to you. It's a short movie. It's called I Hate Flies. It's about a guy who has a restaurant in the West Village where he, auditions his customers. If they don't behave according to his rules, I mean, it's you've heard of the soup Nazi. This is a guy who will no joining tables together, no sitting down with more than four people. And he has
talking.
No, not quite. It's a wonderful restaurant. People line up outside because the food is so
good.
It's
a real restaurant?
Yeah.
Do you know what it's called?
The movie is called I Hate Flies. I don't remember the name of the restaurant. That's really
interesting. One of my personal pet peeves in restaurants is when couples go out to dinner and they sit side by side at a table instead of across from each other. I don't know why, but that bothers me.
They don't like each other, maybe?
I mean, they like each other too much, maybe. They sit side by side like they're on a bus or something.
Well, they want to both look at the same thing or in the restaurant, you know. You see that woman over there being rude to the waiter? That's terrible. Yeah, I agree.
Not to the waiter, but it's just like the general average. It's like I go through an agency where I pay a fee so they find me a job. So I worked at the Waverly. I worked at the I worked Shining Star.
Cool.
I worked at Dale's. I've worked at TikTok. I've worked at the Manhattan. I've worked at all these places, and I'm like, I mean, they have no regard to giving the customers value. And I've served in one place where, you know, where he deliberately would he would pretend to make decaf coffee, but it's regular coffee. And you expect me to lie to these people. And
well, what's
you know,
the exception?
Sounds
what's
like
silver?
A used car salesman, you know?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
They sell used food, too?
You would be surprised.
I'd be more upset if I were asked for regular coffee, like a decaf.
Well, a lot of these places don't want to serve decaf because it costs them money. God forbid you have, I mean, you have to make, you spend money to make some money. But it's just the crap food, and they get the cheapest possible ingredients.
Oh, but they prepare it beautifully, right?
Yeah, don't they?
Right.
Don't they? Meanwhile, they have...
What are you going to do?
Well, hopefully I get my book out, someone reads it, hopefully that'll make some change, but I run my mouth as much as I can. But my point being, tonight was like the night of all nights. I could not believe how many people in that restaurant could care less about the rest of people in this country. Oh. Was it 55 million with no health insurance? I mean, talking about being heartless.
Well, you should start your own restaurant.
It isn't completely the fault of the boobs. It's because of this fantastic, incredible propaganda campaign that the pharmaceutical industry is running that makes everyone think that the money is going to be taken from them.
Well, the media
that
is
they're,
complicit.
That they're, absurd. It's really
well,
absurd.
Well, I talk to people not only at the restaurant,
I mean,
but on the bus.
What are they going to do with the people who come back from this war of Mr. Obama's?
Absolutely.
That have concussions and worse? I mean, who's going to take care of them?
Well, you know, I don't just talk to people at the restaurants, but I kind of expand my realm. I'm on the Internet. I have friends from high school, friends from a graduate school, undergraduate school that I keep in contact with. So I'm asking these questions constantly. And I do talk to people when I go out of state. I'll take the Amtrak down to, down to South Florida, which I did last year for a month. I talk to people. And their attitude is, I got mine. If you don't, that's your problem.
Grandpa Al Lewis used to say the exact same thing. I got mine and up yours, to quote him.
Exactly. That's one thing my father told me.
Yeah, but that is not the way he lived his life.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's why he was able to see that with some perspective.
You're on the air, too.
Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you.
Great show, as always. Thank you.
And you're on the air.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hello?
Yeah, hello, Bob. Just checking in from the street.
What? Oh, wait a minute. What's that?
Just checking in from the street, Bob.
Oh, is it John McDonough?
You got it.
Hi, John. How you doing?
It's good to see the old Caballo back again.
where are you now?
Coming down Bedford Avenue in Hipster Heaven in Williamsburg, official.
Oh, Bedford Avenue.
Hipster Heaven. Yeah. Bob, I was thinking about this time 8 years or 7 years ago when the 9/11 happened, how we were doing the show from down there and just had to walk from Fulton Street down to the station. That's where I was coming up to
what
the show.
Station is that?
I think we could only get off at Fulton Street at that
time. No. When I say give the station break, I don't mean Fulton Street, 7th Avenue. I mean WBAI in New York City.
Bob,
that's the station.
So popular. You're like Amy Goodman. It takes you a half hour to describe all the stations you're on lately.
Well, we didn't do them all yet. Let's.
Well, there are only three or four. Yeah. I wouldn't mind if there were some more added.
CWMD, Kasilof, Alaska.
That's right.
CJLY, Nelson, British Columbia.
Right.
WJFF in
Jeffersonville, Grahamsville, and Liberty, New York.
And streaming on WBAI.org.
All over the universe.
And beyond.
I wanted to ask you, if Sarah Palin gets to set up the death panels, who do you want to be on it? Maybe Henry Kissinger, Giuliani. I mean, who would you prefer to have on the death panels if you have to go in front of them?
Go in front of them?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you meant candidates.
Well, you know what? You could have candidates, and then if you appear before them, it's Henry Kissinger, Rudy Giuliani, and maybe Sarah Palin.
Did you read about Allen Ginsberg's call to Henry Kissinger?
No.
Allen said, if he could talk to Henry Kissinger, maybe he could make him see something, you know, in the what the peace people were saying right? So a telephone call was arranged, and they spoke to each other, and Kissinger said, "Well, we could have a meeting, and we could talk." And Ginsburg said, "Good, yes, let's both be naked." And somehow the meeting didn't happen.
Because they would have given Allen Ginsburg the Peace Prize rather than Kissinger.
Yeah, right.
Come off.
Right. Hi, you're on the air. With John McDonough. John?
Yeah. I'm heading towards the Williamsburg Bridge right now. I got to get to the Lower East Side.
Well, you're riding with John McDonough now. Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
I heard the program, the people running for council, and I agree with your listener that said it's so serious that what I heard tonight, I thought I was in Kafkaian world. I woke up from a peaceful sleep, and these people were talking about such corruption. It made me ill. This was tonight. They were on the radio up here, and I was listening to them. And I said, I've got to see what these people look like. And can you hear me, Bob?
Yes, but you're writing with John McDonough.
Oh, John, you know what you said, John? Oh, thank you. John, you described it as hips to heaven. This world is crazy. Your job must be unbelievable right now, John.
I must be where?
Unbelievable. Your job. I'm talking about the work you do.
Yeah, the way it's going now, I think with you speaking, I might have to charge you.
John,
thank you.
John, can we?
Sorry, I didn't.
Can
I'm
we
sorry.
Pick somebody else up and split the fee?
I don't want to waste.
Yeah, you're on the air too, and you're in John McDonough's taxi.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Oh, hello. I was a taxi driver from 1988 to 1994.
Uh huh.
Hello. I was a taxi driver from 80 to 94, and I want to know how John McDonough feels. Now that New York has essentially is a different city, it's been gentrified, Disneyfied, and Nazified. I wrote a letter to the Wall Street Journal that they did a review of Jane Jacobs.
Did they print it?
No, they didn't print it. I can't figure out why after I described New York like that, that I don't think that it was Jane Jacobs' vision to have New York metamorphosed into a cultural wasteland that has been gentrified, Disneyfied, and Nazified. I can't figure out why it wasn't printed.
Maybe it will be later.
But what is John McDonough's view? Isn't it a whole different city than what it was? He remembers the Bowery as it was, and so do you, Bob. I mean, what is your... Don't you feel like Rod Taylor in the Time Machine, that you've been transported to this new world that, you know, was totally outside of your vision from years ago?
You know, I spent a lot of my youth in the village, in Greenwich Village. And it wasn't a week that you didn't hear somebody say, you know, the village, it ain't what it used to be. You know what it was like in the days when John Barrymore lived down here, when, and I thought, you know, it is the same, except different people are doing the things that we used to do, you know, and maybe the city is the same, and it just looks like it's been robbed of its humanity because we're looking in the places where the Nazis have moved in. But there are places in the city where life still goes on. New York still exists.
Well, maybe when I walk along Steinway Street, I sense New York as it was, you know, all where there's no class tension, everybody's just a regular person from all over the world, nobody really cares who you look like or where you're from. But in Manhattan now, all the regular stores have been pushed out onto the street, like street carts and all that, and food vendors serving taxi drivers right on the sidewalks and streets, and it's like if you don't look like you're one of the happening people of Soho, it's a city where they've essentially gotten rid of us. You know, I mean, you discuss that quite often, what they do to us in New York, you know. But it's, I do sense that still in places like Astoria, that of the old New York as it was.
Places like Astoria and Brooklyn and even Staten Island. Maybe I shouldn't say even Staten Island. But there, you know, the city, it's really hard to suppress that instinct, you know. You know what Brendan Behan said about New York?
I don't even know who Brendan Behan is, but I'd be interested.
He's a great, great Irish poet and playwright. John McDonough will tell you who Brendan Behan is.
And there's a plaque to him on the Chelsea Hotel on 23rd Street. Anyone who hates New York hates humanity.
That's right. That's what I was going to say.
Well, yeah. I'll have to think about that one, but and those bike lanes are retarded. You know, on Grand Street, I think that it'll cause more danger. It's like everything has been put into a slot. It's just not the New York that we remember. But I don't know. As you said, maybe it's just me. You know that each generation changes. But I couldn't picture anything like this. I'll tell you. I don't know. I'll leave it at that.
Well, what can we do to change it back a little bit? You know, to push it back in the other direction.
That's a good question, you know, and maybe Great Depression number two, as it's coming on now, would help these high-hatted people realize, you know, that they're not much different than us. I don't know, you know, the seatbelt nonsense where they run up to you and ticket you for seatbelts and, you know, these Nazi-like tactics like that and West 42nd Street has been transformed into this big wasteland now of Disney. But what could we do? I really don't know. It's the power and the money. That sounds very trite, but you know, John McDonough could, and yourself, of course, could relate to this whole thing, and I guess that money and power always wins out.
Well, I got to admit, I used to live on 42nd Street. You know, I had an apartment in a building on 42nd Street. And when I go there, which I do not do very often, but I happened to go to B.B. King's a while ago to hear, you know, great music. But it is overpowering, you know. The maybe I just didn't notice it in the old days of how greedy the real estate people were and the high prices of admission, but you know, you go to B.B. King's, you hear great music and you hear great performers, and I don't know, I expect Mark Hurwitz will be playing there soon. Maybe he'll be playing here soon. It's 10 after 3. We haven't heard hardly any live music this morning.
That's true.
Dave,
Bob, thank you very much for taking
Dave, this. I called you Mark.
Let me just say
one
thing.
Because Mark is my brother's name. I thought for a second, how did you know that?
Oh, well, I wanted to have Mark here tonight. How did you get here?
That's very interesting. There's been some psychic powers at play today, all day long.
What does your brother do?
He is the father of two beautiful twins that are a year and a half old right now.
From this, he makes a living.
Yeah, they pay well, those two babies.
Oh, hello?
Yeah.
I just want to say one thing. The waiter who called up, there's a very famous book called Waiter Rant, which came out about a year or two ago. And this waiter writes about his adventures. I believe the restaurant was in Dobbs Ferry. Hello?
Yeah.
And he says that 4 out of 5 I read the review of the book in the Wall Street Journal, but I did not read the book itself. But quoting from the review, he says that 4 out of 5 customers are totally normal people, but the other 1 out of 5 are completely out of their minds.
And that's in Dobbs Ferry, so those odds are very favorable.
Well, John, is that true? Would you say 1 out of 5 people is okay? Or
no, they're out of their mind.
I only wish I had that many sane customers a day. Bob, I want to play a little music for the cab drivers out there. Is that all right?
All right, sure.
Okay.
And then we'll have some music from... what do you got there?
It's like a meter.
Is that the meter?
That's the meter. That's the music of the cab driver.
I know that sound.
If you can hear that all day, you're having a good day.
Have a good day.
Is it busy? I mean,
it's just a sea of empty cabs. I'm going up Delancey Street right now. There's a club over on Spring, off Hudson. There's a couple of clubs there, so... As I say, I'll be taking the trust fund babies up to the Upper East Side. Because if you're hanging out drinking now, you're surely not getting up for work tomorrow.
That's not sure across the board, but...
Trust fund babies, yes.
I lit a thin green candle to make you jealous of me. But the room just filled up with mosquitoes. They heard that my body was free. Then I took the dust of a long sleepless night and I put it in your little shoe. And then I confessed that I tortured the dress that you wore for the world to see through. And I showed my heart to the doctor, and he said, "You've just got to quit." Then he wrote himself a prescription, and your name was mentioned in it. Then he locked himself in the library shelf with the details of our honeymoon. And I hear from the nurse that he's gotten much worse and his practice is all in a ruin. A saint who had loved you, so I studied all night in his school. He taught that the duty of lovers is to tarnish the golden rule. And just when I was sure that his teachings were pure, he drowned himself in the pool. His body is gone, but back here on the lawn, his spirit continues to drool. An Eskimo showed me a movie he'd recently taken of you. The poor man could hardly stop shivering. His lips and his fingers were blue. I suppose that he froze when the wind took your clothes, and I guess that he never got warm. But you stand there so nice in your blizzard of ice. Please let me come into the storm. Please let me come into the storm. Please let me come into your storm. That was a song by Leonard Cohen. I felt like we'd heard a lot of music that I wrote tonight, and it'd be good to sing one that I didn't write.
Well, I'm sure he'd think he was in good company, you know.
I hope so. I did see him and perform in May, and it was incredible.
Yeah.
And also that song reminds me of someone who I'm sure is not listening tonight, but I wanted to play anyways because cosmically I think that it will resonate and reverberate, perhaps. Should I do another?
Sure, sure. Of his or
of
yours?
Of mine, I guess. Yeah, I'll play one that.
Do you do songs of other artists as well?
Not usually, no.
That's one of your few covers.
Yeah, Leonard is an I've never played that actually, in other than for. I mean, I've never played that in this kind of. In a public kind of space, it's always either, it's been for myself. I don't know, it's been a song that I've liked for a while, but I've never really covered for other people in a performance type setting. But this is a song. This is a song that I played the first time that I was on BAI that I think some people here in the station liked, and I'll play again.
Who were the people you came up with that time? It was a wonderful group.
That was most likely, that was with Jeannie Schofield. Yeah. And Matt Bogdanow and Jennifer Turner.
Jeannie Schofield has just gotten
married. Yeah.
Just got married, yeah. Congratulations to her. And and her husband has been a guy that I went to college with, actually. I've known for a long time, and he's wonderful and very talented guy. He's a filmmaker. And they're off to start a life together, and it's very exciting.
Well, I hope she doesn't stop singing.
Oh, she won't. She won't. She's got music in her blood and in her family.
Her father is a great, great jazz musician.
He transcends his music. Mm-hmm. It's hard to even describe, but seeing him play attaches me to something else. It's almost like a religious experience. It speaks in a language that I feel like is in the marrow of my bones, something primitive that I once knew and many lives ago and have forgotten, that he reminds me about, like the beating of a drum or something like that. It's really connected to something deep. The song goes out to Richard Hirsch. If I don't believe in anything, I will not be a victim. Believe that I have sinned or that I need to be forgiven, and I will not take part in my parents' religion. Crusade around the world, turning Hindus into Christians. And I will not feel guilty for the things that I've been given, like a childhood of innocence and college education. I was drunk on the fumes of a passing SUV, sucking on the gasoline. And though it made me dizzy, I breathe and breathe and breathe, and I passed out and I had a dream. It was of you and me. I guess wait and see. You say that there's a problem, we're gonna have to dig past black mountains, dark forests, rivers and twigs. But we've always been so good at finding treasure in the soil, like diamonds, emerald, silver, money, blood and oil. And you say that you're not guilty for the jewels that you wore. They were smuggled from West Africa to fund a civil war. And you laugh at all the wise men, the poets and the sages, who dream of something good, like a prophet who can save us. Cause soon there will be darkness, you can see it in the clouds, scrape their bottoms on the chimneys of every house. Cause God is so perfect, man is just an imitation, and it's cold in the shadow of God's creation, asking what am I here for and why am I waiting? Always reaching for an answer that's so tired of waiting. Now my head is cocked up in a fit of starvation at some fruit on the branch of a tree that I am shaking. And God will not help me, the devil couldn't make him, so I give up the hope of any future salvation. And Sheikh, his name was carried into every mission station and hung on virgin lips that were so moist that they could taste it. And till the apple fell, the world is not God's creation. It's the opposite turned backwards by imagination. I'm no longer angry, in fact I don't even blame him, cause there's no words for some beauty, just a need to create them.
Oh, before all this happened, someone must have felt something at the top of the mountain and called it religion. And now I'm looking deep into the soul of a woman, and I swear to Jesus Christ that I have got the same feeling. And I know that there is something that I can believe in, cause I feel that I should live, and that I do not need a reason.
What do you call that?
That's called My Parents' Religion.
Is that on one of your previous recordings?
Yeah, that's on the record that came out last summer called The Fire to Make Preparations. And that's one of the last tracks. And
you perform around?
I do. In the past few years, it's become more cyclical, though. When I am playing, it seems that there's a tour or something like that attached to it, and then the time off I've spent either writing or in the studio, like this summer. And the last show that we played was at a festival in Brooklyn called the Northside Festival, which was in June. And then the next show is going to be in October at the CMJ Festival, which is always it happens each fall in the Lower East Side, and is a pretty exciting thing. And then in the spring, when this new record comes out, there's going to be tours behind that, because it seems healthy to get into a cycle of writing, recording, putting out a record, touring behind it. Because when I do go on tour, it's always good to have something, a new record behind it, because that way the press is more interested in writing about what's going on, and the people that come to the shows, they have something new to look forward to and something new to take home with them. So it's always good to have new material, and it feels like starting to settle into that kind of cycle.
Well, I thank you for bringing your new material here this morning.
Oh, man, it was really exciting for me.
I don't know whether we played all of these. There are
a few too many.
Yeah. I don't know. A couple that we couldn't play because they had naughty words. I managed to cover up one of those naughty words.
Yeah.
I don't have the disc candy. I don't know where.
I thank you.
It was great.
Very much. And what is that?
This is from our other list. Oh. Okay. Well, this has been. Let's make way for Ibrahim Gonzalez, I believe, is in the moment. It's coming
up. Is he in the building?
I don't know. Let's hear a little more.
We have 6 minutes more. Yeah. In which to maybe entertain a telephone call from someone who has something terrible to say about us. You're on the radio. Oh.
Mark Hurwitz, how interesting.
This is a very sick puppy, this guy.
I missed that. My headphones were off for that one. That's too bad.
Oh, I'm sorry you missed it.
It seemed like a gem. That one seemed like the best one on there.
Listen, don't feel that you'll be soiled by being associated with that previous caller or with this next one. You're on the radio. Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Good morning.
I very much enjoyed the music. But I didn't hear the whole thing. I had to be downstairs. And I didn't think that, what is his name? The cab guy the one that works at the station. What's his name again?
John McDonough.
Yeah. I've been very sick, by the way, so that's why I act funny. But, can I just get to first that Leonard Cohen song? I hope I can hear that again. I missed his concert when he came. But what I didn't understand, or either you or McDonough, he's not on the air now, right?
No.
And he doesn't seem to know the things that those of us that are not cab drivers, I don't think it's good to have all these damn cabs. I wish John had a better job. I think what they've done to the streets and what this mayor has done, I really believe I'm living in Berlin.
I'm living in the war years prior to World War One. Two, and I can see it all happening because I watch Democracy Now. And if you're a young musician would want to understand what's happening, you have to watch Democracy Now, because that's the reason I left you and I had time to see the tail end of what I heard in the morning. But we are suffering here, and this is a difficult world. And while I love hearing that music, anyone that doesn't live here and hasn't been suffering, I lost my house burned out. You can't believe what's happened since 06. This city is very corrupt. And while that music is encouraging, we need to organize like those other men that called. These restaurants are disgusting, and what they're doing with all the people sitting outside, I really think we have to organize. And you gave me hope when you brought that 1968 tape. I had hope that people had the I was gassed. I went up the Supreme Court steps when I was a young student, not a student, when we went out to Minnesota and all those other places.
You're on the air, too. Hi.
Hello?
Hello. Hello. Oh, is this Aaron Kay?
Yes, it is.
Oh, hi, Aaron. How are you? Congratulations on your daughter's wedding.
Yes. I do thank you, all these people who did.
Oh, quick. We only have a minute left of the program, Aaron. Say something quick, brilliant, and then we'll go on.
Listen, Joe Wilson, you know, that clown who heckled Obama, he gets Bozo of the Year award.
Oh, we have a few contenders for that here on the program this morning. Thanks, Aaron. You're on the radio. So
is this live?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's the dildo head who keeps calling? Is that George?
I wouldn't call him that.
What would you call him?
Let's see.
Misunderstood?
Yeah, that's not so bad. It's a little bit too... that's an instrument of pleasure.
It's pretty, with the meaning to dildos.
A dildo is an instrument of pleasure. George does not provide pleasure for many people. George doesn't take much pleasure in things. I don't mean to make fun of his name, but I call him George Disliker. And you're on the radio, you're the last caller. Oh, Ibrahim Gonzalez has just walked in and done a very fancy soft shoe step there, Ibrahim. Thank you very much.
Watch my soft shoe step.
Where'd you get that great hat?
Oh, this one?
Where did you get that hat?
One of these...
Where did you get that?
Really cool stores.
Smile. Isn't it a jolly one?
In the generic,
and just the proper style. Oh, I should like to have one.
And so hum.
Just the same as that. Where'er I go, they'd shout, "Hello, where did you get that hat?"
I want to be each Thursday with...
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.